That's right, folks. We're back.
How's it going, everybody?
Thanks again for joining us here on Expanded Perspectives. And the boys are back.
Yeah. That's right.
So for everyone that was panicking, don't panic.
Yeah, we just need to relax. I mean, it's a podcast, folks. It's a podcast.
Okay, we'll let you know what's going on. This is what went down. We're not even going to... I'm not doing the intros. We're not doing the howdy and nice to meet y'all. Y'all know, this. It's us. This is just what happened. Between Thanksgiving and then Kyle's little boy's birthday, and then my birthday, and then my son's birthday, and all the family that showed up, and then what I'm going to share with y'all later on in this segment happened, we could not get together to do a dang thing. We were slammed. And finally, my wife and Kyle's wife, I'm pretty sure, got together on this and was like, hey, you guys just take a week. Don't do anything. Just spend time with the fam. Let's just relax. And we said, you know what? You got it.
Yeah, it's been almost 5 years. And for the Monday show, I don't think we've ever missed a Monday show ever.
It may have been like a day late. I think it came out on a Tuesday.
Yeah,
one
maybe
time.
Once. Right. And it was just one of those deals. You know how it is, the grind. We just kind of got backed up and just we're trying to figure out a time to record the show. And it looked like even when I went to California and stuff, we just would pre-record shows and release them. We just got caught in a week where there was too many things going on. I was just like, man, let's just not do it. Yeah. It's a holiday here. You got your birthday. You got Luke's birthday.
We got
all kinds of family in town. It's like, look, we'll just do it the next week. I mean, everybody, all these other shows take breaks. We never do. We just took a break, and it was kind of nice.
It was really, really nice.
But I'm glad to be back.
I am, too. And that being said, there are going to be some changes.
One of the changes you might hear first before you start is the sound of my voice. What you may not know over the last couple of episodes is we've been having trouble with my microphone. And what I use is a Heil. That's an H-E-I-L. A Heil PR40 microphone, which is a really good microphone, has a really good sound. But for whatever reason, mine's been giving me trouble, and it's been crapping out lately. And finally today, when we got in studio, I couldn't get it to work at all.
Yeah.
So Cam took it all apart. He was looking at it. So I think it's toast. So I'm using an actual old microphone. This is one of the original microphones we used on the show.
When we started.
This is an Audix OM2. It's only about $100, but it sounds pretty good. We got some new microphones on their way here now from Amazon. And so this is like the backup quarterback. This is the backup to Eli Manning. I'm going to have to use it for today. I think it'll get us through. But if you do notice a slight difference in our voice or my voice compared to the normal show, that's what it is. Just different microphone.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll try to get
carry
that.
On, sir. What were you saying?
Well, there's going to be some changes. And I don't even know how to approach this. I'm just going to come out and tell everybody. That break allowed Kyle and I to kind of reevaluate what we were doing. And this is something when we started it, we never intended it to be like this. We, honest to God, thought we were going to do this podcast thing for about 6 months.
Yeah.
And that was going to be it. Maybe a year. We were just going to give it a little while. And that was it. We figured it would go nowhere. We'd get about 300 people listening. And then we were going to completely quit and go do something else. Go attack something else for a hobby. And this thing has really, really grown. It's gotten crazy. Even for the people that were complaining when we first started doing ads, we never sought out the ads. They sought us out.
Yeah, that's right. They came to us.
Yeah. We turned it down. So this is something that me and Kyle have never had to balance. And it's, we have put constraints on ourselves. And I know, speaking for me, I don't like to follow like a set agenda, like a set protocol of this is how you have to do it. I don't do well with structure in that form. And so self-imposed structure has kind of caused me to lose the fun that I was having doing this show of I have to have a show done and it has to be done like on Monday and we got to get it done before and release it because we were releasing them way early, like on Sundays, and then we started and all that. So I guess what I'm saying is this.
It's become a job.
It's become a job that I never intended to do. And aside from wanting to quit altogether and just be like, we're done with it, we're not doing that. But what we are going to do is this. We're going to get a little bit looser with our release schedule.
Yeah.
The show may come out Monday. It may come out Tuesday. It may come out Wednesday, or it may come out sometime in the week. We're going to try to release a show. Try every week. We may only release a show every 2 weeks. We don't know how it's going to do. We're going to play it loose and see how this goes. Our shows may be 45 minutes. They may be 2 hours. We're going to start doing a little bit less structure.
Yeah.
And a lot more of relaxed, still telling stories, just kind of really, a lot of the reviews, and you people are wonderful for leaving the reviews, a lot of the reviews say, it feels like you're sitting around a campfire talking with friends. And that's what we wanted to do. And then for some wild reason, we got away from that. And we just structured where we have to do news and we have to do this and we have to do that. We're getting away from all that. We're going to make it the most laid back, fun discussion that we can possibly bring. We'll discuss news where it's necessary. Maybe it won't be. Maybe we'll discuss something else. We don't know. We're going to share. Kyle and I are going to Colorado in February with the family. We're going to do a podcast up there.
Yeah,
we're going to sit around and just record, sitting around the campfire, whatever we're going to do. We are going to start, I guess for the lack of a better term, opening our arms more to y'all without the structure. So we're still going to do the show.
Yeah.
Squeeze it in. But we're going to open our doors and just go, hey, look. This is, we've tried to be professional, and Kyle and I are not professional in any way, and we realize we burned ourselves out. So
yeah, you just, too much structure, I think.
It was just too much.
You know, I have to remind everyone that this isn't our main job. We don't podcast as a living.
Yeah.
We have full-time jobs, both of us.
And it's not like we make a pretty living off of the podcast either. Compared to what a lot of people think, it's not that way.
Yeah.
By any means.
I think people would be shocked at how much they think that we make compared to what we really do make.
Now, before we go any further, the Elite Show will not change.
That will not change. There will be an Elite Show every week.
Every week, guaranteed. The Elite Show will always be there because we are beholden to y'all. Y'all have been with us when we started. You're paying customers. We will make sure that that gets done every week. But the other, the free show, is just that. It's free. So we're just going to kind of loosen it up a little bit and have a lot. Now, look, we're not going to curse. Okay. We're not doing that. See, I don't have to worry about that. If you're listening to it with friends or family or any of your grandparents or your grandparents are listening to it with grandkids or you're listening to it in your show or where you work, don't worry. We're not going to be just dropping F-bombs and going crazy.
Are you talking about on the Elite Show?
Yeah. No. I'm talking on any of it.
Oh,
we're
yeah,
just,
yeah.
We're
no,
not
definitely
cursing.
Not the free show because we're re-aired on several radio
stations.
Yeah,
there's no cursing. So. None of that changes, so we're not going completely ham, but we are going to just loosen up and have a lot more fun with a lot less structure and just try to relax and bring the fun back into it, because it wasn't y'all, it was us. We're the ones that made it more into a job.
Oh, yeah, it was totally us.
That we were like, this is not what I was looking
and
forward
look,
to.
And look, not to be complaining, but like, thank you so much for everyone that's listening. I mean, we love our listeners. We didn't want to let you down. That's kind of like what we felt like. It's like, man, we're letting everybody down. We're not letting... I just want to say, we just want to do it more laid back, less structure. It doesn't come out exactly on a stringent plan. So with that being said, let's get into the news. Now, this is one of the most highly things I talk about the most often. It's the robot uprising.
And it was shared with us by a lot of y'all.
Yeah, a lot of people have shared this, and I appreciate it. If you want to check this out, I'll put links to it in the show notes, but if you want to just go to it right now, you have to go to YouTube, and you have to search up, what's the name of this thing? It's called...
Death Dealer is what it's called.
What's New Atlas? That's ATLAS. If you search up What's New Atlas on YouTube, you'll watch a video of this robot. The robot Atlas, we've covered it many times, but now it's received some kind of upgrade. And the thing is jumping over obstacles. And get this, folks, it does a backflip.
What's New Atlas? Whoa, whoa, whoa.
Yeah, right. And so Elon Musk has once again started warning people about the dangers of unchecked artificial intelligence. And it's based on this video. Now, he used in a Twitter tweet recently, he talked about, he said, this is nothing. This is in response to this video. This is nothing. In a few years, that bot will move so fast, you'll need a strobe light to see it. Sweet dreams. And after watching this, I'm like, what is he talking about? So I go over there and I look and I'm like, sure enough, this thing, I hate to beat an old drum, but it does look more and more like the Terminator movies every couple months when they come out with these upgrades.
Yes.
He went on to say, we've got to regulate AI robotics like we do food, like we do drugs, like we do aircraft and cars. Public risks require public oversight. Getting rid of the FAA wouldn't make flying safer. They're all there for a good reason. Now, this is just the most recent warning from Elon Musk about robotics, which he considers humanity's biggest existential threat. At a talk recently at the National Governors Association meeting in July, Musk said that lawmakers need to start regulating robots before they start killing people. He also signed on to a 2015 letter by technology luminaries urging the United Nations to ban killer robots. And I couldn't agree more. This is always like a joke on the show. People love to send me these videos of robots and stuff. Robotic dogs, robotic cheetahs, robotic raptors. But this, this looks like a real thing.
It is a real thing.
I know, but like, I like how they cover it up and they're just like, oh no, we're just trying to test the boundaries of our robots. We're trying to see what we can make them do. Why? But that they're building this stuff, right? To fight. That's what it's for. Every time anything in technology comes out, the government instantly links, like, how can we alter this to kill people?
Yeah.
Like, oh, I created this new thing. I can explode plutonium. You're like, well, how can we use this as an application to kill more people? That's basically everything we do.
Yeah.
Lasers. How do we make that laser? Can we attach it to sharks? You know, whatever.
Yeah.
That's what this is. They are building killer robots, and on a upside, human beings won't have to go to combat anymore. No one will get killed anymore. We'll just send robots. But on a freakier side,
they're going to be running through your town killing you.
Robots are going to be everywhere. You better learn how to make EMPs, people.
I don't see anything good coming of this.
There's not.
Like we always say, look, I'm sure there is somewhere. They're like heavy lifting. We talk about that. But why does a robot need to do a backflip? Why does a robot need to be, I mean, what job, aside from a gymnast or like a clown or a professional acrobat, is robots going to steal their jobs now? I'm going to go to the circus to watch a professional acrobat or whatever, you know. I'm going to go to Vegas to watch robots do backflips.
No. So that it can backflip over your fence and come into your house and kill you.
That's what you create a robot with extreme agility for one reason. That's to run down human beings that are extremely agile and put them away.
I'm trying to remember from the movie Terminator. I'd have to ask my father if he could speak because he watches that thing like every day. What is the name of, are they called hunter killers? I don't know. There was a specific type of robot.
You know what? I think that's what it is.
That they were sent out to eliminate people. I remember just the underground, those guys were, Kyle and those guys were trying to stop. They're like, oh no, the hunter killers come.
Yeah,
and that's when you're toast.
Was that what it was from, or was it The Matrix where they did the hunter killer? Maybe it was both. I don't know.
I don't remember.
Yeah, I need Pop-Pop to explain it to me. I need to teach him one-handed sign language.
I need to eat some lion's mane or something. Get my memory back.
Well, I've got you something here. I know how much Kyle loves lake monsters. From my amigos at Cryptozoology News comes the Canadian reports.
Yes.
A Loch Ness monster sighting in Ontario, Philly.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, it says a man in Ontario claims that he saw a creature that looked, and this is what he says, just like a Loch Ness monster. Now,
okay.
I don't know how he knows exactly what it looks like, but that's what he thinks it looks like. He's a professional welder, and he asked to remain anonymous, but he said he was driving on the highway by Lake, man, oh, I probably shouldn't pronounce this. It looks like it's Nipissing is what it says. Nipissing?
I have no idea.
And he said he spotted this dinosaur-like creature. Now, this is what he said. I was going to another lake and cottage to go on a fishing trip. I looked over and saw a huge water creature break the surface of the water. I'm certain this was the real deal because it stayed surfaced for more than 5 minutes. Now, this happened to him back in 01, in June, so summertime. He said smartphones weren't yet available and people didn't carry cameras in their pockets daily, or, you know, he'd have probably got after it. He's a 40-year-old fella, and he said that this creature had a 20-foot-long skinny neck and a head that seems small for such a neck. Says the head was like a football. It was huge, dark in color. Says as soon as I saw it, I thought of the Loch Ness Monster. Now he goes on to say the sighting was real and that it was beautiful. He says, but we need nature cameras here. For sure you will get footage is what he's talking about. So that's his sighting. And of course they go and they talk about the Loch Ness Monster that was reportedly first seen in 1933. You know, and it goes on and they call it, people thought it was a dragon.
Yeah, what's the other famous Canadian sea serpent? Ogopogo?
Yeah, there's a bunch of them.
It lives up in like the Okanagan Lake up in British Columbia.
Yeah, yeah. But I don't think it's described quite like this thing has been described. But what would be wrong with putting up like some sort of live stream around those lakes? Like a hotspot, you know, like if you knew they were like hotspots of Bigfoot sightings or any of these hotspots. Well, just like the hotspots for the Phantom that they've been seeing in Chicago. Why not put a live stream video up, you know, where you could have it all hooked up? So, I don't know. I think it would be cool. And I'm sure you'd probably get hoaxers that would know where the camera was and such like that. But how wild would it be if you had a nature camera up and then you caught footage of some sort of giant, you know, lake creature that we didn't know existed? I think that would be pretty bad, eh?
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
Folks, what I'm going to talk to y'all about today happened to me over the break, over the Thanksgiving, you know, you run into friends and family. So whenever we get back from this little quick break, I'm going to talk to you about, I guess, a duende. There's no other way that I could describe it other than some really interesting duende sightings that took place in Texas and involved a friend of mine. You're listening to Expanded Perspectives. All right, now as all of y'all know, sometimes when you have family gatherings or holidays, they can be great places to hear stories and things from people you haven't seen in some time. Well, this Thanksgiving break, I had a group of stories dropped into my lap, and I have been fighting a scream in my brain not to tell everyone. So I need to set this up before y'all, you know, before, so y'all will understand some of this history. Now, during the holiday weekend last week, and of course during my birthday fun, I ran into an old hunting buddy of mine, and I hadn't spoken to him in a few years, face to face, of course.
Mm-hmm.
I'd spoke to him on the phone, but he's a bit older than me, and as y'all know, I just turned 42, so he's not much of a tech guy. Put that out there first and foremost. He's been a construction contractor for as long as I've known him, and that's been close to 20 years. Now, he's not one of those guys who watches TV, doesn't watch that much, and he doesn't really give two damn about what's going viral or any of that. You know, that's not what he does. I mean, hell, his wife makes jokes about how long it took him to finally get a smartphone. And then she had to teach him about texting because he's one of those crazy people that would rather call you than text. Yeah, one of those type of psychos. It's exactly what I'm talking about. So, anyway, I bring all this up so y'all get an idea about what kind of guy he is. He's a hardworking family man who has one single passion, and that's the outdoors. He loves to hunt, loves to fish in the outdoors all the time. That's everything that it revolves around. You know, camo seat covers on. Now, look, I'm not talking about a redneck. I'm talking about a very well-educated man in his business, what he does, you know, and all this. And he's, you know, ran his company for quite some time. So he has the opportunity to go do and partake in a lot of hunts and a lot of fishing trips all over. So he's been to a lot of places, but he just doesn't bother himself. He's one of those guys that I admire because he lives in the moment. Now, he's the man that first introduced me, I guess you could say, to really how important we hunters are to the conservation of wildlife, and that it's our responsibility to lead the charge in protecting and serving Mother Nature.
All right.
So with all that, I'm going to share his stories with y'all. Now, for storytelling purposes, I'm going to call him Doc. That's not his name. That's what I'm not, you know, we're going to keep this vague because it took some work. In fact, this info took me 5 days to get out of him. The only reason he finally opened up about it was because his wife played him some of our podcasts so he could hear that I wasn't going to give him hell or make fun of him. That's how this got rolling. Like I said, Doc doesn't have Facebook or any social media, so the only way he found out about the show is because I'm friends with his wife. So that's it, all right? So, to get into this, back in the late 90s, I hunted a place outside of Ozona, Texas, and it was a great place because of its remoteness and how vast and pretty much untouched it is. So when I met Doc, we had that in common because he'd hunted all over Texas, but all south of I-10 holds a very special place in his heart. And like his name, folks, I'm not giving out the exact place where all this took place. And I'll tell you this, that Doc was very adamant about that part. They can't know. Nobody can know exactly where this is. And he said that just like the wildlife, whatever these things were, they deserve the same respect and the same protection. Now, the area that we'll be talking about is south of Interstate 10, from Fort Stockton down through Rosenfield, east over like to Langtree, and then north back up to I-10 around Sonora. And that includes Sheffield, Pandale, Sanderson, stuff like that, parts of Texas. Now, if you want to get online and pull up those pictures, you're more than welcome to, and you'll see exactly what I'm talking about. Now, also, he's not the most elaborate storyteller, and at times it was like pulling teeth to get him to convey his true emotions. And also, he didn't have a knowledge base like we do of the strange and unusual to compare this to. So I had to ask and re-ask questions and, for the lack of better wording, lead him, if you will, through his details. So while this is all Doc's stories, and I shared these with him before telling y'all, I did write them out in my way of storytelling and my pace. So that's, I want to get all that clear. This isn't word for word. It's me working with him and piecing this together. Now that all of that is out of the way, after I said, after several hours of face-to-face conversation with Doc, I'm going to share you these stories. Also, I didn't record it. We didn't film it. We didn't do the audio recording. He wasn't having that. He does not want his voice, his face, nothing.
Right.
Yeah. Nothing. He doesn't want to be involved in it, just to share these stories. So, like I said, moving forward, you cue the Kelvin Mockingbird flute music, and we will get started. Sighting number one that he told me about was called the water trough. So, and I guess the only way to tell this story is to start back in 06 when I first got on this place, and I had hunted all around this place. Well, within several miles, let's say, but I always, you know, hunted in that area, but I always wanted to get this part of the land, this area. It was unleased and untouched. Now, the family that owned it was very old, an older couple that lived there, and it wasn't until the husband passed away that the wife decided to lease it out. Now, I knew the old man, and he was a good guy, but he had been burned a long time back by some bad hunters, and that left a bad taste in his mouth, so he decided to never do it again. Well, when his widow contacted me, I lost my mind. It was like I was a child on Christmas all over again. Now, the couple didn't live on the ranch, but a bit away. So this place was like discovering a country for the first time. And it came with a nice price tag, but I didn't care. And, you know, I knew it was going to cost, you know, it was going to be expensive, and I understood that. So I handpicked the guys that I was putting on it. And they are all bow hunters like us, and that's all I wanted to do on this place, at least until after Christmas. And no gunshots fired on it until late season was my plan. That was what Doc's telling me, folks. So, you know, you have to understand, he wanted to bow hunt this whole place. And even if there was gunshots, it would be just few and far between.
Right.
So he says, we went down in the summer to build these stands and to scout the place out. Now, it's a large piece of land, and it was rough and rocky, had big hills and valleys. The type of place that I love. Now, this trip was the first time I noticed something strange, but had no idea about any of this stuff, so I didn't say anything, and I waited to see if the other guys would. I picked a spot at the end of a dirt road, and I use the word road loosely. Basically, it was a place where in the past you could see had been cleared out and driven on enough to make the tire grooves in the soil, but other than that, it was just a wide trail. At the end of this trail was an old windmill. At the base of this windmill was a long concrete water trough that was about 6 inches above ground level. It had been dug out, so the trough was actually a foot deep and 10 feet long. It had been built for sheep that used to be ran on the place so that they would always have the fresh water. Now, it had been turned off for a good while, so that was my first priority. I got some parts. It didn't take much except digging out the old trough, and I had fresh water flowing again. Now, I planned to build a bow stand a few hundred yards from the water trough, so that way nothing felt pressured when they drank, but I could hopefully catch a good buck or turkey coming and going. Now, I hate hunting over feeders, and I know water is the same thing, but I'm not hunting right over it. It's always there, so the animal sets the time that they come. So after the water got flowing, the place turned crazy. I'd walk up the road to the windmill to see what was coming all through there, and there were deer tracks, turkey tracks, javelina tracks. The dirt around it had turned more into a powder because of the traffic. Well, I went down there in mid-September to set in my blind and pretty much hang out and see what was coming. At this point, I hadn't put up any trail cameras anywhere. And the first morning I set till about 10 a.m., and then I left the ground blind. I didn't have anything but a pistol because I'm not hunting, but I always carry it just in case of rattlesnakes. So I sneak up to the water trough, which is about 300 yards from my blind, and I was hoping to see something. I didn't have my binos around my neck because I didn't get them out of my pack yet. You know, I was only relaxing. And I see movement through the mesquites, and what looks like two raccoons take off from the water hole, which I thought was a little odd. See, rabbit animals have a hard time swallowing, so they usually don't drink, but yet these coons didn't move like a normal coon, so I was thinking rabies. But I was confused, and also, why would there be two of them with rabies hanging out?
Yeah.
So I eased down to the trough to inspect the powdery ground, And that's when I got a chill, Cam. You see, right where those damn raccoons had been standing were little footprints. Now, I'm not talking like kid footprints. I'm talking like baby feet.
Whoa.
Yeah. Says, for a split second, I thought one of the other guys was messing with me. You know, like I was trying to rationalize what my brain was seeing, but I knew inside that I was the only one at camp. Then I start thinking about some lost children or abandoned kids, and I get sick at my stomach, and I can feel myself getting this frantic feeling like I had to do something, like I had to find these kids and get them some help. So I take off in the direction I saw the raccoons go. Now I'm tracking these tiny footprints in the dirt until they disappear, not 10 yards from the trough, because the ground gets hard again, and then grassy. So I circle the area, and I'm making bigger and bigger circles. And the whole time I'm making these circles, I'm calling out to them. I'm telling them it'll be okay. I'm here to help. But there was nothing, Cam, not a damn thing. It was probably the most helpless and useless I have ever felt. Well, I went back to camp, and I just sat in silence. I didn't know if I was seeing things. Should I go and call the sheriff or get the game warden? Or try to get help, or if I was just going crazy. So for the next 2 days, I went back there and I searched. I called and I sat, and I was hoping to catch a glimpse or to find another track. But there was nothing. In the end, I went back home and I chalked it up to some strange anomaly that I hoped never happened again, and I just waited till deer season. Now that whole season, nothing else happened. And I looked for tracks every time I hunted that spot. Nobody else brought up seeing anything odd, and I didn't say a word about what I saw either. As time went on, especially around our camp, which was an old barn that we had converted into a lodge, basically, well, it got more updated. We had 2 travel trailers down there and a few ATVs, and then we had a little storage shed with supplies and stuff in it. Now, some guys had feeders, so there was always a bags of corn in the shed, and tools and odds and ends, like any normal deer lease camp. Well, over the next 2 years, we noticed that rats or coons would get into the old shed, and we'd have to patch the holes and where they were trying to get in and get to the corn and whatnot. Said it wasn't until a couple of sockets from a toolbox vanished, and then all the lids off the wasp spray and the WD-40 cans went missing. And it wasn't until one of the guys said his camp axe that was strapped to his four-wheeler went missing that I started thinking about those footprints again. He told us that the axe scabbard was double velcroed, so it was impossible to come undone and fall out. Now, he thought somebody borrowed it and lost it and just didn't want to say anything. Well, after that, things were normal, and I, being the only guy on the lease that had his own business, I was down there almost year-round. Now, I'm not sure if my wife loved it or hated it, but she knew that this was the place that I'd been dying to get on, so I think she just kind of let me slide. Well, the next sighting took place in 2010. I had a pop-up blind set on the side of a big mesquite flat overlooking a canyon. Now, this spot was way back in the back of the property, and it bordered an even larger piece of land that I'm pretty sure nobody ever went on.
Now, this is the same property?
Same property, same deer lease, same guy, a few years later, 4 years later. So, footprint sightings.
Yep.
Nothing. Year or two goes by. The shed stuff starts missing out of the shed.
Yeah.
Nothing. A few years go by, 2010. He's back in the back of this deer lease, real rough. He said that the only way to get to this spot was to hike back into it. And he says that when I got back in there, said I had always planned that I was going to spend all day. Now, this mesquite flat had a ton of buck rubs on it and was a great travel corridor and had some good open shots up to 48 yards. So he'd been ranging and checking it all out. He said it was an ideal place to rattle and grunt during the rut or to catch a buck during midday. Now, I'm going to stop right there, folks, to kind of fill y'all in. Buck rubs are where a buck, a white-tailed deer, when his horns grow in, they're in velvet. As they go to harden, they rub that velvet off because basically it's just blood vessels under the skin. And as they harden, it itches and they rub them off. So as those buck rubs, they do it on tree limbs or small saplings, small to standing trees. And you can see them shed, they're really pretty much put a beating on those little trees. So those are buck rubs. That's something that you always look for when you're whitetail hunting, is there'll be a line of them lots of times. Now, they may be several hundred yards apart, but that's how you can tell where the bucks are moving. And then when he talks about rattling, that's where you take two horns.
Antlers.
Yes, my bad. Antlers. Yeah, horns are permanent. Antlers fall off. You take two antlers and you basically slam them and clatter them together, and it makes the sound of two whitetail fighting. And when they hear that, other whitetail always assume that they're fighting over a doe that's in estrus, ready to be bred. So they show up to the fight. So you can bang horns together.
Like to watch a good fight. Yeah. I mean, if I hear a fight, I'm running too. Yeah. I want to see what's going on.
They're
going to
show up. That's what he's doing up. That's what Doc was doing up there, is he knew this big open spot was. He goes on to say that I set my blind up the summer before with the back right along a side of a steep valley. And he says, I mean, like right on it, maybe 2 or 3 foot of the drop before you got to that edge. He said, so I could slip in from the rough side of this valley and never step in the mesquite flat. Now the blind, he said, faced north for the north winds. And that way anything trying to circle behind would have trouble catching his scent off the back of that big draw. So he's facing due north, looking in this area. He says, now what I'm going to tell you, I've never told anyone but my wife and the guy that I hunt on with this place. He says, I left camp early and I rode my mountain bike as far back in the place as I could. I'm going to stop right there too, folks. A lot of people, and myself included, will ride mountain bikes on these places because they're quiet. They don't leave the scent. They're not noisy. And you can get to and from in those places deep. So you would ride them as far back in there on your lease as you can. You know, you prop it up against a tree and then walk on in. He says, then I switched to hiking in the dark, trying to only use the starlight and what little moonlight was out to find my way. It was mid-December and the rut was in full swing. So it was cold in the mornings with a light breeze. And I knew the moon phase was going to give me problems a little later. So this was a go time for a big buck. And I made my way up into the blind, and I was waiting, just like any other hunt. And I watched several bucks chasing does, and I did some rattling and had some fun with some smaller bucks reacting to the horns, or antlers, but nothing that I was looking for. So I was watching a group of 3 doe on the flat for a while, and was really just thinking how lucky I was to have these types of opportunities, to get to be in nature and to see the things I've seen. Basically feeling a lot like I was when I found those tracks 4 years earlier. Well, I'm guessing it was around 10:30 or 11. I turned around and I opened the back windows to the blind just enough to glass out of. I grabbed my binoculars. I just started scanning the big valley and all the land below. Now, I should explain that there was a trail a long way across this valley. And I would almost every time, and I really mean almost every time, see javelina going up or down the side of this little mountain. Now, those little suckers had carved out a good little path, and from what I could tell, you know, had no problem strolling up and down the hill there. I think it's, you know, I think it led, he says, to a bigger valley, and there had to be some water source on the other side. I'm not sure because it's on the neighbor's place. So it was across the fence. He could see it go up, and then they were on the back neighbor's place. He said, either way, there was always something to watch in that area. Now, I might add that I had this blind up, you know, for a good while. No, it wasn't just up for a bit. It had been up for a while now. He says, so I'm glassing around, and I'm seeing some critters when I noticed movement on the trail that I was just telling you about. He says, man, reliving these things gives me a weird feeling all over again. I didn't think it'd be this hard to discuss, but I guess it's because I've not really come to grips with what I saw, and if I completely do, it's going to change basically how I view the outdoors. But anyways,
oh no, what did he say?
I look at what I think is a small group of javelina walking up the little trail. I don't think I've ever ranged this spot, and I don't know if my rangefinder would go that far, but I would guess that it's between 800 and 900 yards away. So I pull my binoculars up to glass, of course, and I lose my breath. It's not 3 javelina, like I thought it was. Cam, it was 3 little Indians. Now, I'm not talking about kids. I mean, I'm looking at 3 full-grown, what appear to be Indians, and they can't be over 24 inches tall.
Like Native Americans, but just shrunken down.
That's what I said, Indians. I'm just using what he says. Yeah, Native Americans, 24 inches tall.
Yeah.
Native Americans. He says, I feel this tightness start in my hands and arms, move into my chest. Hell, my hands are getting sweaty just telling you this. I have this feeling like at any minute they're going to turn and see me looking at them and run, but I know they won't. I watch them for, I'd say, a good 3 minutes as they slowly work their way up the trail. Now, the one in the lead was wearing an animal skin top, like they'd cut a hole in the middle of it and just pulled it over their head, and it looked like it was raccoon skin. Now, all three had on pants of some sort and skin coats. I couldn't get all the details of their clothing, but I could tell the one in the lead had long gray hair and was the oldest, and the younger two followed him or her up the trail. They all had walking sticks and little packs on and some stuff hanging off their hips. I assume they had belts tying their jackets closed and then little pouches hanging off of it. They looked like they had fallen out of the past and were stuck on the side of the hill. Now, I asked him, and I didn't really pile all this in there.
That's wild, man.
But I asked him, I said, could those things you saw in the hips, could they have been the lids off of those spray cans? Like little cups or scoops.
I got you. Yeah.
He said, I couldn't tell. You know, I wasn't sure what I was. Of course, you got to imagine what you're seeing at this point. Your mind is racing. So while he's telling me this, his wife's sitting there, we're sitting there. You can just see, and she's physically looks like she's glad he's getting it out and telling, you know, not just because you can see him struggling. Doc's having a hard time, and it gets the next one's even worse than this. The last
he had another sighting.
He had another sighting was the last one that happened to him there
on the same property.
And he's still on the property. Yeah, yeah, same property.
We need to get out there.
Now he said, I never stopped watching them until they were gone, and then I scanned through my glasses until my head hurt so bad I was getting sick. I sat there all day thinking about what I'd seen and was adding up how this was possible. I didn't go back there to that spot for the rest of the year, but I have hunted that spot since seeing them, and I haven't seen them again. Like the last time, I didn't say anything to the others about what I had seen. The last sighting was turkey season. It says this last one took place during turkey season of 2014, and me and one other guy was in camp that weekend. Said we had planned to hunt together so one could call and the other could shoot, but the birds were so hot that we couldn't wait and we went off by ourselves. It was mid-April and I was hunting an old dry creek bed, and I had already taken one good gobbler and was hoping for a shot at another. And I had seen some good ones in this area, so I moved into this spot well before daylight and I did some calling. Now he goes on to say this, he goes, and the birds were hot, and by I mean hot was if you slammed the truck door, they would gobble. Now, we've all hunted in spots like that to where they're on the roost going crazy in the mornings. He said, if you clapped your hands loud, they would gobble. He said, it was crazy. And I was really, really excited. He said, so I heard a tom, and when he left the roost, he started moving away from me. So he's calling. Listen to that turkey call back. He said, I figured he had a hen or two with him and that I needed to close the distance and try to get around in front of him without being seen.
Right.
He says, my plan was to use that dry creek bed to stay below the turkey's line of sight, and then I could haul ass quietly, set around him, and then set up my decoys, and then I could see if I could pull him away from those hens or at least get him to offer me a shot. And he says, here's where my life changed again, Cam, when I made this decision. I think about what if I'd not seen those tracks, or what if I had not seen those three little guys, or what if, or he said, what if I had not came face to face with these two tiny hunters? And I'm like, excuse me? He goes, yeah. He goes, this story sounds even crazier because it was like the encounters were ramping up, but I swear this is how it all happened. I was moving in the loose sand, not really making a sound, and staying crouched over enough that nothing up top that was turkey height could see me unless it was right on the edge of that dry creek bank. And he said, that's exactly what happened. So there was a bit of an S bend on one part of that creek. And he said it went back to the right and then sharply back to the left and then straightened out and opened up to some thick brush, which basically when he described it to me is it sounds like it's not really a true creek, a more of a runoff, like a low water crossing across a road.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And it's got sand in it, so it's real quiet. So you're moving down there. So he's coming up out of like basically where the creek would start is where he's at. He says, my plan was to pop out there at where that thick brush was,
right,
and use that brush as a wall to get around ahead of the birds. He said, so I made the right turn and slipped around back to the left, and boom, there they were on the bank of that old dry creek bed, 20 foot away. He said, and maybe 4 foot above me, just right up above me, looking right at me were two tiny Indian hunters. He said, I froze. He goes, I'm in full camo, full face mask, backpack on, decoys in my right hand, and I'm holding my bow by the string in my left hand.
Right.
I'm standing right in the middle of this creek bed, wide-eyed and staring at two men. I don't really know how to say this without sounding romantic or full of crap. He said, but two of the most noble and beautiful things I have ever seen.
Just two tiny Native American hunters.
He said both were 2 foot tall, lean little muscular arms, no shirts on, only brown pants that I'm guessing was leather, no shoes on, long black hair, dark brown skin, and they were wearing necklaces. And he says this, I shit you not, Cam, I think one of them had a socket on the necklace around his neck. That's what he tells me. Yes. He said they both had little bags, like little Indiana Jones bags, little satchel bags. They looked like they had tiny bows and arrows, and one had a little rabbit with its feet all tied together hanging around him. You know how they tie them up like you put like small game? He said, I'm guessing that was lunch. Yeah. Now he's telling me this. He's
only 24 inches tall, a rabbit. Yeah. I mean, that could feed a family.
Well, you got to think about it. Could it feed at least four, you would imagine?
Yeah.
You're talking about 2 foot. I mean, the whole rabbit top to bottom, it'd be like holding up a small deer.
Yeah, jackrabbits are taller than that.
You're exactly right. He says, they didn't look as surprised as I'm sure I looked, but we both stood and stared at each other for what felt like 5 minutes, but it was probably more like 60 seconds. He says, I felt like they were taking me in as much as I was doing that to them. And the really weird thing was, I didn't feel that nervous or panicked. Like that whole feeling, like I did before.
Man, that is...
He says, I felt like I was receiving a gift, man. Like I had been a good shepherd for Mother Nature, and she was showing me some others that worked for her as well.
We got to get down to this place.
Now, he goes on to tell me, he said, I had no idea what to do, and I felt like I was in the wrong. He said, now, wait, get a load of this stuff, right? Because I might have been the same way. When you're just stuck, you're like...
You're just frozen. Like, what do I do?
Yeah. He said, I looked the one in the front straight in his eyes, and I nodded at him, and then I walked right past him. He said, I passed maybe 10 foot from them as I headed out towards that brush wall. He says, Cam, as I passed, they both turned and watched me, but I never looked back. I didn't want them to feel threatened in any way. He said, I made a big circle out and back to my mountain bike, put the decoys in my pack, strapped my bow to it, and pedaled my ass back to camp.
Yeah, I'll bet.
Yeah. He said, I sat there in silence under the awning there on the picnic table till my buddy got back from hunting. I said, we BS'd about the hunt and the normal small talk. And that evening, I told him that I didn't feel so great, and I just stayed around camp the rest of the trip, and I headed home a couple days later. So he never went back out. After that, nothing. So you have to imagine, you hunt in the morning, spring turkey season, it don't get dark till like 9.
Right.
So he's done. He said, I tried to put it in the back of my head, but I think about it every time I go out. Says eventually, just last year, he says, one of the guys slipped up and said something to me about the DeWindies on the ranch.
Really?
He said, I said, what are you talking about? He said how he'd seen them several years ago and told his wife, and she came up with him with the information. He told me what he'd seen, and then I shared mine with him. And he was actually jealous of my encounters, but said the others haven't ever mentioned seeing anything. Now, I've not seen any more tracks or any sign of them. And Doc was adamant about this. He goes, I hope I didn't run them off after that day. He said, I'm still on the lease, and I hope to keep it until I die. But nothing has gone missing, and not seeing any signs of them makes me sad, man. Makes me real sad. He goes, I hope nothing has happened to them. I never thought I'd share this story, is what he said. He goes, and I damn sure never thought I'd be telling you, Cam. And he starts laughing the whole time. And he goes, but this is it. He goes, tell the people listening to respect the outdoors and to always put Mother Nature first. She's the only one we have, and she holds some mysterious treasures out there.
And we're back with Expanded Perspectives. That is an incredible story, or stories.
Right?
I kind of see what he's talking about, though. It's like he's kind of sad. I think if I, you know, you try to put yourself in situations when you hear these stories about UFOs or Sasquatch or whatever. If I saw two tiny Native American hunters out there, I would kind of be like into it too. Like, in other words, like I wouldn't want to do them any harm. I wouldn't want them to be scared of me.
Yeah.
It'd be kind of cool knowing that they're out there.
We're sharing a moment. That's there's a lot of this. This is what I like I told you, I talked to him and I had to whittle all this down and build it into a story. But there's a lot. It's one of those things I wished I could recorded. Because there was a lot more in between the conversation, just like that. I go, was it like you shared a moment, like you were, like anytime anybody's in anything, if you're into bicycling or you're into, you know, triathlons or you're into bow hunting, you share a common interest and you share a bond. And it's something with hunters that we share a bond.
Yeah.
And I ask him if he had that feeling. And he's like, that was that romantic part that he part was talking about. As he was like, man, that's what he said. He goes, I hate to say that they were beautiful men. They're beautiful, noble. I don't know. But he was like, I have no answer for what I saw and the connection. This instant, like, and I want to be with you. I want to hang out with you guys. I want to go hunt with you guys.
And it, like him, because he was bow hunting, they probably saw the bow and kind of knew what he was doing.
Yeah.
You know, and his story isn't that unique. I mean, we've talked about the little people, the gnomes, the Duendes. There's lots of different descriptions, but I have heard the descriptions of just tiny Native American people. There's a couple books on it. I remember hearing a story where, like, a girl, I think this was up in Oklahoma, she said, like, when she was a little girl, like her grandmother, that they would just from time to time see these little people playing up and around their porch. They would find little footprints, little handprints on the windows. Her grandmother would kind of leave, you know, breadcrumbs or some pie crumbs or something out on the porch, and it was just like a known thing that there was this little race of tiny people.
Well, what made me so interested in it too, as he was talking, is he saw the footprints and it was all because of water. So there was a constant water source.
Makes sense.
Yeah. And then when that stuff went missing, it was like, if the little people were there, they just started noticing. It made me think back to the stories that we shared too that happened down in that same area. You remember when they were building the house.
That's right.
And the chalk
line
was gone, and they reported seeing the same thing. Look like little Native Americans and little skins out there. And then the ones in Colorado that we talked about, the Duendes that they had seen, looked like guys in little skins. They thought were little Indians, little brownies or whatnot that they call them down there.
Right.
That was the whole deal. Is he's like, when the stuff went missing, it's almost like, well, once they went and investigated the area, because you can only imagine when nobody was there, they could come and investigate it all they wanted to. So once they've investigated the area, that's it. They're done. I just wonder. And I even asked him that, and that's what he said kind of made him the saddest, was I go, do you think your presence that close of a brush with them drove them off? And he's like, I feel like it did. He said, I feel now today that interaction I had with them made them leave, made them realize that they were what used to be untouched, what they used to have without anybody else on there is now, you know. And he said, I have a feeling that that's where they were going, is that they were done. You know, and you brought up the whole rabbit thing. I even asked him, you know, about the rabbit. I go, was it a full size rabbit?
Yeah.
He didn't really remember that part. He just knew it was a rabbit. It could have been a baby. It could have been something small, you know, because I was like, I can't imagine a 24-inch dude packing a rabbit around. And he's like, man, I'm telling you, it was a rabbit. But then when he brought up it could have been a baby rabbit, well, you start thinking about also in the spring, it'd have been easy to find them. It'd have been easy to kill one, sneak up on one, whatever it is. The whole idea, man, when he's telling me, I want to call bullshit. I want to look him in the face and be like, you're a liar. This isn't real. You're making up so much crap. But he's not.
Yeah.
He sat there, looked me in the face, and told me his wife has been after him to talk about it for a long time. And then the one other guy saw it, and the whole Duende deal. And that's why he said he had no clue, never brought it up. And I guess his wife had listened to one of the shows or seen it, and it just jogged her. And then that's how it got started, is she brought it up to me when we were all hanging out. About, oh yeah, you know, you talked about, you need to talk to, you know, need to go talk to Doc about it.
Yeah, man, that's incredible.
And like he said, he hasn't seen anything else. So now we've been 3 years, he's not seen anything else. It's over. But I keep hoping, fingers crossed, because of the way it falls. It seems like it's every 4 years. It was like 2006, then he saw something in 2010.
Yeah, that's true.
He saw
something
in 2014. I'm just waiting for next deer season. I'm like, Doc, please, this whole deal. I didn't ask him if I could go down there. I wanted to.
Yeah, you know you want to.
I wanted to so bad to go, hey, can I go? But I think he would probably be like, no, because I know why you're going. You're not going to come down here and go javelina hunting or something like that. You're going to come down here and go looking around. He didn't want to mess with. I mean, that was the reason he wouldn't tell nobody.
Yeah, that makes sense, right?
But when he was describing the footprints, he was in panic mode. He said, I really thought they were kids out there. Wow. I thought that they, but he, the one thing that he said was unique to me is when he said the baby feet. As he said, I mean like smaller than toddler feet, which would be, you know, about the size, as I'm holding my hands up, 2 foot tall.
Yeah.
You would only think a foot would be, what, 3 inches long?
Yeah.
So you're talking baby feet. He said that's what he couldn't get through his mind was like, they're moving like people, but they got little bitty baby feet. It's like, yeah. So they're not like babies toddling around. Are you going to catch a toddler? Toddler ain't fast enough to get away from a grown man. He's like, these things were moving.
Yeah, it reminds me of a video I saw on YouTube a couple years ago. Did you ever see that video where there's like a 2-year-old boy in Argentina just sitting and playing on the tile
floor?
Runs
behind him?
And it runs by him.
Yeah.
And the parents said that he had what they thought was an imaginary friend that he would talk to and kind of play with. And I wonder if it was, you know, one of these little people.
Maybe it was.
And they seem to think that there was more than one of them living in and around their house. Now, you know, I have no idea if their house is located in a populated city or if it's out in the country. I don't know. But there have been these sightings, and please, if you have any sightings of your own of duendes or little people or just anything interesting, please send them to us, expandedperspectives@yahoo.com. On the last Elite show, I did a story where a woman had a pair of earrings that she lost for whatever reason. She knows where she puts them, the same place every time. And then like a year or so later, she had been, you know, talking to whatever had taken them. Talking out loud, and then they were returned. We talked about weird things, like, you know, you talked about one time your son knows that he threw something away, and then a few minutes later it was back in his pocket. Somebody just recently emailed us a pretty cool story where they were hunting with their father. I think they were hunting for quail or something. And when they went to leave, couldn't find his car keys. And he's like, man, I always put my car keys in my jacket pocket. So I guess we got to go retrace our steps back in the field where they had been hunting. So they walked around for a couple hours looking for the keys that must have fallen out of his coat. Couldn't find them. They had to break down and call his wife to come pick him up. An hour and a half drive. She had to drive and come pick him up because they didn't have the keys. Anyways, fast forward. Like a couple years later, the guy's wearing the same coat, reaches in his pocket, pulls out those car keys.
Now, that's weird.
Right? It's just one of those things. And that's just another interesting story that our listeners send. I mean, we get hundreds, but Mary brings them to me from time to time. It's like, hey, check this out. This is one you were just talking about, very similar to yours. So, like I said, if you have a cool story, you can email us. You can just send them to expandedperspectives@yahoo.com, and Mary goes through those and then forwards them on to us. Don't be worried. Mary's job is secure, so if you're worrying about us not coming up with shows every Monday, Mary's in no danger of losing her job.
Yeah.
Don't forget about Expanded Perspectives Elite. If you enjoy this show but want to hear more, then you need to sign up for Expanded Perspectives Elite. Elite is an additional show we do each week, and it's just like this show, only a little more laid back. We're not censored, as we are on this show, because this show, of course, is re-aired on other radio stations. Also, there's no ads or commercials. To sign up is easy. Just go to the website, expandedperspectives.com, click on the Elite tab. It's only $5 a month, and not only will you get another episode every week, but you'll get access to the entire back catalog, which is over 3 years' worth of shows. So go over there and check that out. You can follow me and Cam on all forms of social media. Cam, what do you got planned for your week?
Just hard work and clean living, my friend. That's it.
I've got more of the same. I got to get my Christmas shopping going.
Oh, yeah.
I was just talking to you about getting on the Amazon account. I got to use the show's Amazon account because I don't want the wife seeing our personal Amazon account because then she kind of knows what I ordered. Remember me talking about how the twins had hacked into that last Christmas? And so they were able to see what we were ordering for them online. I will say quickly before we get out of here, I hope Alistair Overeem retires.
Oh.
That was a brutal knockout. I mean, brutal knockout. The guy, I went the next day and kind of checked out his career. And although illustrious, I think he's been stopped like 10 to 12 times. And that's just in the fights. I can imagine how many times in training, how many times in kickboxing, things like that. I mean,
so brutal.
He's a great guy. I just hate to see people, you know, because that CTE, man, that's a real thing.
It's a thing. It's because I enjoy the sport and I care about the guys that do it. Mm-hmm. I want to see him hang him up. There's no shame. Be
I think
done
so.
With it, man.
I think, you know, fighters will never admit it. I think it's about time that the UFC needs to step in and go, look, bro.
Yeah, like, come on, man. We love you.
We can't
do this.
You
gotta stop this. You have to stop this.
You have to stop that. So I hope everybody out there has a good week. Give somebody a hug. Take care. And for your Elite members, we'll be talking to you later this week. For everybody else, we'll talk to you next week. I'm Kyle Filson. He's Cam Hale.
Peace, y'all.